You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Jack Sal. He's an artist that lives and works in New York. Jack, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about what you're doing now. I know you have a show in Rome, and perhaps we can start off by talking about that show and what you're working on now.
Yeah, actually, it's a bit outside of Rome in Campagnano, which is a town to the north of Rome. And it's in the studio of a young artist who invited me, and we both did a painting of the same dimensions, about 6 foot by 4 foot. And it's just those two paintings in the studio, which is acting as a kind of alternative exhibition space. And to my surprise, we had a great turnout of people coming out to see it. And it also was interesting as well, because this artist is 20 years different than younger than me, has spent some time in New York, and also works as the assistant of Sandro Chia, which is how through whom we met.
Huh. And so there was a big crowd for that show, you're saying? I mean, it sounds like a very kind of intimate venue. This is in a studio. It's not commercial in any way, is it? Or is it?
No, not at all. And also, it was the first time that the event was organized. And, in fact, it was curated by a journalist and curator, Manuela de Leonardis, and Alessandro Cucchi, who's also a curator and writer, and he's the son of Enzo Cucchi. So it was sort of handing the torch, as it were, to a younger generation, but a nice flow of people came out from both generations, as it were, both critics and artists. Alessandro Tuomoli came, Simonetta Lux, who's an art critic and was a professor at the university, where she had an experimental lab where, in fact, Enzo Cucchi gave one of his historic talks. So it was a nice mix of both young people, but also a kind of touch with the history of contemporary art in Rome.
So tell me about the scene there a little bit. I mean, I obviously don't know those. I mean, that sounds like an interesting crowd, but what is it like there? You're in the States all the time. You're going back and forth. There's I always think there's a very different feel to how the arts are perceived or how people talk about the arts in Europe. In this particular show that you just had, how was it received? Can you give us kind of a snapshot of what the crowd is like there as opposed to how it would be in New York, for example?
Well, yeah, I think one of the differences is the kind of large variety of people who came, because there were older collectors, young people with their children. There was even a group of American artists, young artists from Brooklyn who had just participated in a show, a group show in Rome, who came with their gallerist, an Italian who has a gallery down in Tribeca. So there's much less of a kind of pecking order, you might find in the difference between a 57th Street gallery and one in Bushwick, and where there's a much more of a mix, both generationally, but also in terms of people's backgrounds and interests and the like. So, and also, I've been going to Rome since 1985, so there are old friends and colleagues who I know who actually made the venture out to come see it. So,
let's talk about a little bit about how things evolved in Rome for you starting in 1985. And maybe if possible, that I guess that contributed greatly to your career, right? Were you teaching or doing other jobs in 1985?
I was. I had just finished teaching at the ICP, the International Center of Photography, because I trained as a photographer and was teaching there as well as a couple university part-time jobs, and had just had my show at Light Gallery with Sala Witt. And I used money from work that I sold to take this first trip to Europe, going from London to Paris, London, Amsterdam, Paris, and then to Rome. And back then, 1985, you could write to curators and they would see you. And so I was able to sell work at each stop to sort of fund my trip. And then I met Sal in Umbria, outside of his home in Spoleto, and then worked on a project that kept me for a year and a half in Italy, where I frescoed a chapel outside of Padua for a private family. And,
wow.
Yeah. So that kept me in Italy, and then through that project and staying in Rome, I was asked by Jim Melchert, who was then the director of the American Academy of Rome, to become the first visiting artist program. And that was this idea of inviting artists who had some connection to the Italian art scene to be invited to the Academy so that the pre-Rome people could have some kind of bridge or link to the world outside of the Academy. So I spent
right.
a year there. So. And that's how I got my foot in the door, as it were, in Italy. But it was back then like it was in New York. You could just meet people. I mean, the first year I was in Rome, I remember sitting at a dinner with this guy with a beard who was explaining soccer to me. And with my very bad Italian, he was trying to explain how this team in Turin was so great. And then afterwards I asked a friend who had a curator, who's the guy with the beard who was talking about the soccer? Oh, that's Pistoletto. And of course he was rooting for his home team.
Right.
So, and back then, so I just met everyone from Pistoletto, Cunellis, Anselmo, all the Arcipova guys who were coming through Rome or living in Rome.
And that's not the case now so much. You can't meet people like that anymore that way.
Well, I think what's happened in the art world, the way that it's parallels or mirrors what happens and has happened in society, is that there's a real breakdown in the stratification of mixtures of people's interest by money and by career and by power, so that artists who have big careers tend to devote a lot of their energy to those careers, and the kind of socializing is focused on that, and there's not as a kind of openness, It's not like it was. I mean, I still see the people who I met back in the 80s, but, they're much more busy. Last time, for instance, I saw Cunellis at the Venice Biennale, and the week before that I saw him at another show that he had. But it's not like it used to be where you just run into people
right.
on the street.
And is Italy still very supportive? It sounds like Italy is a place for you that continually, or was for a while initially buying work and very supportive of.
I think there's still a belief in Italy that culture matters. Unfortunately, like many other places, including the rest of the European Union, problems of economics have caused a real problematic relationship between funding and the arts on a public level. For instance, you know, there's the Museum of Contemporary Art in Rome was without a budget for a year and a half while the city government, you know, decided what it wanted to do. The same is true of the brand new Maxi, the Museum for 21st Century Art, where shows are either brought with a sponsor or they're not done. So, unfortunately, there's the love of art, but not necessarily the means of support. There's still private collectors who do things, but, you know, that too becomes now problematic because a lot of them are hooked into the international art market in the way that they weren't 30 years ago.
And how does that affect the scene that they're hooked into the international art market? How does that affect things?
Well, there was a wonderful collector called Pino Casagrande who was a dear friend who passed away a couple of years ago. And I remember way back when getting a Richard Serra for him, you know, bringing it from New York and arranging to go to Pace because, you know, the idea of coming in to buy a piece was out of the ordinary.
Right.
And so there were intermediaries. Or I remember when Bruce Nauman came to the Academy, I brought him over to meet Pino because there was that connection. And, you know, now there's a Gagosian in Rome. There's, you know, people are part of the market. They go to Basel. They go to the art fairs. If they collect, they know what's happening in the fairs where it used to be that they waited for people to come through.
Right.
So so that's changed. I mean, it's to say that on some levels, you know, Rome is still very provincial because it's outside of the big circuit. You know, it's not the gallery center the way Milan is and not the center of financial wealth the way other industrials, other cities in the north are. But it's just, it's still fascinating. I mean, it's a wonderful place visually to, culturally to be in. It's,
it seems magical to me. I mean, the idea of living there and working there and, you know, the other artists there, it seems like a wonderful thing, you know?
It is. And the fact that you can, you know, on your daily walk from your apartment to your studio, drop in and see a Caravaggio or, you know, stand in the Pantheon, even though you might be surrounded now by thousands of tourists, is still, you know, quite remarkable.
It is remarkable. And so what's happening next? What are you doing now that you're back? Are you working on something else here? Will you be going still back and forth?
I'll probably be going back and forth. What I'm doing now actually is a kind of change in my life after living in the East Village for 32 years in a ex-synagogue that I bought together with Bill Wegman and Tim Greenfield Sanders. I sold my interest in the building and bought two other spaces and some investment, but I'm now also beginning to look to establish a foundation of about art and memory. And that foundation is going to not only house my work, but also work by other artists who are interested in using memory and history as a context for contemporary art.
So let's I'd love to hear a little more about that before we're done with the interview. Now you're talking about building. So you sold your interest. You're going to buy another space in New York that will be the home of this foundation,
tell
me a little more about them. Yeah.
Right. No, actually, my idea is more to actually house the foundation outside the city because the cost of the real estate in Manhattan is so expensive, or even in Brooklyn, that now with the internet and with all the possibilities of access, and even talking to scholars, most the scholars I've spoken to said that it's actually a positive thing to have the foundation outside of the city because it would make research much more feasible in terms of economics. And trying to come to Manhattan to do research is a bit of a problem in terms of costs. So the
right.
idea would be to find a situation outside, and then I'm approaching some not-for-profits to be able to have desk space for the foundation so they'll have a presence in New York without physically being here.
And tell me, if you can briefly, what will be the function or the mission of the foundation?
Well, the foundation is going to house, as I said, works that deal with memory and will invite curators to curate shows from the archive that will be generated digitally and then offered for free to not-for-profit institutions and university galleries. So that once again, as you know, I mean, some of the most interesting shows in the history of contemporary art were done by small university galleries, which now, unfortunately, because of the costs of insurance and transportation and the risks that galleries don't want to take, can't afford to have shows with real high-end contemporary art. So my idea is to allow curators to generate intelligent, serious shows and being able to offer them digitally so that they can be either presented on screens or projected and be available, as I said, for free to these institutions. So somehow we can sort of get people on a college level to be able to see shows that have concepts but also use works that are of a certain quality to allow curators to present their ideas. One example is a curator I've talked to is interested in doing a show about stereotypes and using that as a jumping off point in terms of the kind of way art uses history and memory in terms of where those stereotypes began, how they evolved, what kinds of imagery is used or projected in contemporary terms.
That's very interesting, and that'll happen. I mean, that's happening now. That sounds like a big project, really, or that's over the next few years. When will that be developed, do you think?
Well, I'm hoping to get it off the ground by the next 12 to 24 months.
And what will it be called? Is there a name for the foundation? Or?
Yeah, it's going to be called Foundation for Art and Memory.
Zach, thanks so much for talking with us today. It's really been a pleasure, and I look forward to hearing more about the foundation and your work. And thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.